This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. This morning, we remember flying around Appalachia.
I flew with John F. Kennedy before he was president. I took him to Bluefield and dropped him off. About all, he was a very nice guy. I enjoyed him.
That and more coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. Our Inside Appalachia team is working on an upcoming episode about aviation. We've been asking people about their first or favorite flight memory. This morning, we'll hear a taste of what some of you have already submitted. You'll hear from Benny Mallory first. He built an airport in South Charleston in 1973, and to this day, operates a flight school.
Honey, I could tell you stories that take all day. I flew commercially for probably every politician in town, I think. I flew with John F. Kennedy before he was president. I took him to Bluefield and dropped him off. About all, he was a very nice guy. I enjoyed him. Oh, yeah, I've been around a while.
My name is Andrew York. I grew up in Chapmanville, West Virginia. I started flying when I was 17 years old, when I was in high school, and I did start flying at the McDonald Airfield, which is also known as the Taplin Airport. I'm currently a professional pilot.
Well, my name is Terrell Webb. I taught in Logan County for 30 years. My first flight was in the summer of 1959, and after that first flight, I was hooked.
I've had a wonderful life, honey. My wife and I have been together. We're going to have her 71 anniversary. She would fly anywhere with me. She wasn't a great aviator, but she was a great supporter of me. When our kids was born, she'd set them on her lap and go with me.
A pilot never forgets their first solo. And I was more excited about my first solo than I was the day I got my license. And I was more excited the day I soloed than all the other licenses and ratings I've got after my private pilot's, you know, license. You never forget your first solo, because up until that point, you're learning how to fly, and you still got a long way to go to continue to learn, obviously, and to get your license. But man, that first solo, and when you finally get to do it, it's the first time you ever fly an airplane by yourself. It's only one time.
My first flight, I got to sit up front next to the pilot, and it was just kind of like magic. All of a sudden, you're rolling down the runway, and then you're off and you're up into the air. It's just a different view of the world from a couple thousand feet up.
I line up on the runway down here at Taplin and I take off. And as soon as I broke ground, and I was like, wow, this plane got off the ground a lot quicker. And then it hit me. I was like, I got to land this thing because I'm by myself now. But this is it. It's just the good Lord and myself now. I just circled back around in a 180, made the best landing of my life.
Aviation has been a big part of us and still is. Aviation is a part of West Virginia, and you can get places in a hurry. This is my home. It's going to always be my home. I've been all over the world, and I've seen everything, and I ain't seen nothing as good as this old mud up here. And I'm going to be on this mountain until they put me underground.
That was produced by our Southern Coalfields reporter, Caitlin Tan. We're still looking for stories, by the way, and photos of your favorite flight in Appalachia. Send us an email to insideappalachia@wvpublic.org, and we may use your story in an upcoming episode we're working on about flight in our region. Appalachian writers produce a tremendous amount of work, but finding it isn't always easy. Catherine Ledford and Teresa Lloyd are professors of Appalachian literature at Appalachian State University and East Tennessee State University, respectively. They decided to create an anthology that they could use in their classrooms. The effort took more than a decade, but it's finally available in the form of the 745-page Writing Appalachia Anthology from the University Press of Kentucky. Eric Douglas spoke with Lloyd and Ledford by Zoom to learn more about the book.
Tell me how this project started.
I started teaching Appalachian literature in 1997, and I was frustrated. There were some good anthologies out there, but I was frustrated by what they didn't have in them. There were a few African-American writers, for example, and almost no urban writers. And I thought that it was really important to include those people in Appalachian literature. So I started putting together a course pack. And in some respects, like, I've been researching this thing since 1997.
What was the selection process like? How did you choose what to keep in and what to let go?
We have a variety of times represented. We have a variety of authors represented. We have a variety of places within the region, both rural, urban, suburban spaces. We have the sweep of the geographical space of Appalachia. So we consciously, Tess and I, worked very hard to make sure we were including Northern Appalachian writers, so writers from Pennsylvania, New York. We did use the Appalachian Regional Commission's, the federal agency's definition of what Appalachia is geographically. So we have quite a few Northern Appalachian writers in addition to writers from Central Appalachia, Kentucky, West Virginia, Virginia, and then Southern Georgia, North Carolina, Tennessee.
There's this perception that, you know, all Appalachian writing is about grandma living up a holler, and you know, it's stereotypical, even as writing goes.
I call that mama and biscuits literature. And there are a lot of writers out there who are from Appalachia or who write about Appalachia who don't write about mama and biscuits. And this isn't to say that there's not some really important material that comes out of rural Appalachia. I mean, clearly there is. But for us to say that that's all there is to the region is really to perpetrate the same stereotypes of people who are critical of the region. I mean, and yes, I think it is important to sort of redeem the attitude toward the rural, but it's also important to acknowledge the full diversity of writers who are here.
Now, have you two actually read the entire thing?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, many times.
All right. I didn't know if maybe you'd split it in half or something, or...
We tag teamed quite a bit, but then we would flip. So, you know, Tess might write a head note, take a first stab at writing the introductory biographical information and situating that writer and the work within a larger context, take a first stab at that. And then eventually we would flip those around and I would give my opinion on that as well. So we know this inside out.
Any big surprises for either of you? Any writer or essay that you went, this is new to me and this is fantastic? You know, did you, any big aha moments?
In a way, I've been having these aha moments for 20 years as I come upon these writers. But one of the most aha recent moments that I've had, as I was just thinking about the anthology, we knew we wanted to include poets from Black Mountain College, the Black Mountain poets. We just think that's a really important part of Appalachia. People are, and it should be talked about. And so, but I wasn't totally sure who we should include because there's some really outstanding people there. I went to one of my colleagues, Jesse Graves, who's a poet that teaches at East Tennessee State, and he suggested that we should consider Jonathan Williams. And when I read Jonathan Williams' poetry, that was a true aha moment for me.
I think for me, Robert Guype's novel, Trampoline, it's called Trampoline, an illustrated novel. We have a chapter from that. And I'm a literature person through and through. So when Robert's work isn't necessarily a graphic novel in the sense of like a cartoon panel kind of thing. That's not what Robert is doing, but Robert got includes in Trampoline pen drawings, line drawings that he's done himself, every few pages, sometimes multiple ones on a page, that comment on the story that's being told. And I'm not usually one who likes, I like words on the page. I'm a word girl. So I want words, words, words. So for me, getting to really dig into Robert's novel, select which chapter we wanted, gave me a new appreciation for this new emerging form of literature where you have those drawings that are commenting on and supporting and giving a new perspective on the text, the words that I'm reading.
That was Catherine Ledford and Teresa Lloyd speaking with Eric Douglas about The Writing Appalachia Anthology. The book is a collection of works from more than 150 writers, spanning from the earliest settlers to modern day. This interview is part of a series of interviews with authors from or writing about Appalachia. The first family of the banjo returns to the mountain stage this week when Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn perform songs from their 2017 release, Echo in the Valley. Our song of the week from this week's episode is the couple performing Bloomin' Rose. That was Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn performing Bloomin' Rose live on Mountain Stage. To hear this and more, tune in Friday and Saturday nights at 8 right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our Appalachia Health News Project is made possible with support from the Charleston Area Medical Center and Marshall Health. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Caitlin Tan, Jessica Lilly, Kara Lofton, Liz McCormick, Dave Mistich, Brittany Patterson, Eric Douglas, Corey Nollinger, Emily Allen, and Roxy Todd. Andrea Billups is our news director. I'm your host and producer, Glynis Board. This is West Virginia Morning.
The soul will hold me close and fold my body back in.